Hi there, I'm Gavin Crawford. I'm a writer, an actor, and a comedian. And for the last 8 or 9 years, I have been navigating life with my mother's increasing dementia. Has it been sad? Yeah. Has it been funny? Also, yeah. That's what my brand new podcast series, Let's Not Be Kidding, is about. It's the true story of my life as a comedian, my mom, and dementia. Let's Not Be Kidding, with me, Gavin Crawford. A new 7-part series from CBC Podcasts, available now.
It's not fair to judge a city by its headlines. It's the worst stuff that makes headlines, and they can give you a false sense that a town is more dangerous, more violent than it really is. Unfortunately, though, at least for the town we're visiting today, headlines are one thing, and comprehensive data journalism is another. See, every year, Maclean's puts together a list of the most dangerous places in Canada. They calculate it using Statistics Canada data to reveal where incidents of serious crime per capita are the most frequent, and whether things are getting better or worse over time. And Thompson, Manitoba, is often right near the top of that index. And for the past 4 years running, it has held an honor that no community wants. This town of 14,000 sits at the very top of the Violent Crime Severity Index. And that means, well, there might occasionally be places in Canada with higher crime rates. The crimes in Thompson are more likely to be violent. So what's happening here? Why has nothing seemed to work? What has the town tried, and what would it like to try? What would it need to do it? And to be fair, what about the rest of the people in Thompson? Because there's a real community under those statistics, no matter what kind of ugly picture the numbers paint. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. This is The Big Story. Shannon Van Rays is a freelance writer based in Manitoba, and she spent time in Thompson for this story. Hey, Shannon.
Hi, Jordan.
Why don't you start by telling me, just because it's terrifying, about the Machete Kids of Thompson, Manitoba?
Well, the Machete Kids are exactly what it sounds like. They're kids that have machetes. That's their weapon of choice. And they use them, in assaults. And machetes are pretty easy to get. You can buy them at almost any hardware store in Manitoba for $10. Sharpen them on your own. So they're quite popular. And in Thompson, Manitoba, they've been used in a number of attacks over the last year and in previous years as well, to be fair. One included the hacking of a dog to death during a home invasion. Others, people found themselves chased by machete-wielding kids. And this is something that is clearly weighing on the minds of people who live in Thompson, not surprisingly. And machete kids is something that is a symptom of a bigger problem, and that's youth crime and, of course, overall crime in that city.
How bad is the overall crime problem and the violent crime problem in Thompson, Manitoba?
Well, like everything, it depends who you ask. No small town wants to be known as a crime capital. And there's a lot of good things going on in Thompson that people are proud of. It's located in the boreal forest. It's beautiful. But there definitely is issues. If you're living in a poor area of the city, if you're low income, particularly if you don't have a car and you're walking places, then crime is a much bigger problem for you because you're susceptible. You're out there. And if you're going to encounter someone who's armed or has ill intentions, it's going to be while you're on foot. So people in low income areas probably express the most concern about crime and particularly violent crime. Now, people all over the city express concern about property crime and some of those issues. And people who frequent the downtown area also express concern about assault. Now, when it comes to civic officials, they were pretty upfront. It's like, yes, we do have a problem. It's not great, but it could be worse. So it really ran the gamut and depended who you spoke to, how bad they thought the problem was.
Do we have any idea what's contributed to this problem and sort of, cities don't turn into quote unquote crime capitals overnight? Like, is there a root cause here?
That's an interesting question and probably the hardest to answer. Thompson has a complicated history for a city, but it's not a long history. It was founded in 1956 as a mining town. So it's an unusual beginning. Everyone who's in Thompson, in a way, and who's not Indigenous, came from somewhere else. And people will tell you mining towns are always a little rougher. You get people who come in, they want to earn money, and then they often want to go back to other communities. So the history is a little unusual, and some people do say that contributes to it. But the other factor that's cited as to why crime is so high in Thompson is that it serves a very large regional population. So yes, it's about 14,000 people who live in Thompson, but regionally it serves 55,000 people. And most of those people live in very remote communities, either Northern Affairs communities or First Nations communities, often that are only accessible by air or by winter road. There are a few you can drive to, and those communities really suffer from a lack of infrastructure. They may have high crime themselves. There may be a lack of unemployment. And as a result, the people who live there want to come somewhere better. And often that place is Thompson. And Thompson isn't always equipped to deal with that influx of individuals who have very high needs. Many people also spoke, you know, one of the underlying root causes of crime in Thompson is the legacy of colonialism and residential schools in particular. There's a lot of family breakdown that's contributed to youth crime, and people I spoke to directly link that to, you know, the history of residential schools and the 60s scoop, and of course today's child and family services, which many people say still takes too many Indigenous children out of family settings and puts them in care. So those are all you know, underlying causes that people point to when we talk about why Thompson has such so much crime compared to other cities of comparable size. Although it's probably worth noting that many of the communities that have significant crime in McLean's annual rankings are northern communities on the prairies. So those issues are commonplace to a lot of these remote, more northern communities that see these problems.
I'm often struck by the difference in stories like these, because we do a lot of stories on rankings of best places to live or most dangerous places to live and stuff in Canada. And kind of one of the differences that we see a lot is the story that the stats tell you and then the stories you hear and experience when you actually go and visit these places. So you spent some time in Thompson. Tell me about it.
I did. I mean, the first part about Thompson is, and it's important to say, is getting to Thompson. It's about 8 hours north of Winnipeg. So you're looking at an 8-hour drive if the weather is good. And to just give you an idea of how remote that is, you know, as you're driving, there's not people, there's not a lot of other cars. It's mostly boreal forest, and signs warning you about how many hundreds of kilometers it's going to be to the next gas station.
Right.
So when you get to someplace like Thompson, you know, these people, they've stuck it out in not the most, you know, hospitable climate that the country has to offer. And there's a scrappiness that people, I think, really are proud of, that they've made it work through boom and bust cycles. And I understand they want to showcase that. And cities like Thompson want to showcase, you know, what they have in terms of tourism and natural beauty. There's a joke, you know, Thompson likes to promote that it has a ski hill. It's called Mystery Mountain. But locals will say the joke is, you know, the mystery is where the mountain is. So it's more like a ski bump. And people really want to promote this. And you can understand it. I mean, you get there, you drive in, and there's a lot of things going for it. But I was there for 3 days in the end. And as soon as you come in from the boreal forest and you make your way to downtown Thompson, you can see that there's issues. Addiction is really on full display in the open in downtown Thompson. You know, it's got a city of, you know, for almost 14,000 people, it has a homeless shelter, and the homeless shelter is full to capacity. So you see these people during the day, and it's evidence, you know, that they're suffering, that people are struggling to make a go of it in Thompson. It's almost, some people describe it as a divided community. And if you were to go to Thompson, you'd see it pretty immediately that there's a divide between people who are doing well in Thompson and those who are not. And anytime you have addiction, you have homelessness, I mean, all these problems are out in the open. If you have money and you have, there's issues you're struggling with, you struggle with them in your house. But these are people who really do live their lives in public, and it's unavoidable. I spoke to one person who didn't want to go on the record, but gave a lot of background information, and they were really upset that Thompson is often judged on the three, you know, city blocks in its downtown and not for the whole of it. But at the same time, it's impossible to ignore the fact, if you go to Thompson, that there are social issues and they're easy to see.
What do town officials, I guess the mayor and police officers and social workers who are on the front lines of this, what are they doing and what do they think is needed?
Well, I'd say that most of the civic officials and the RCMP who I spoke to are really realistic about the problem. And they're very aware that the root causes go, that they're deep, and that just tackling crime isn't going to solve the deeper issues. I mean, no one's going to arrest their way out of the problem in Thompson. So some of the things they've initiated is a hub policing model, and that originated, I think, in Glasgow, Scotland. But it brings together social services like mental health, high school guidance counselors, anyone who works with the homeless or transient housing, as well as the RCMP and, you know, municipal officials, anyone who deals with the public, to try and identify people who are in trouble, who may be facing a crisis or dealing with addiction, and really get them the help that they need before something happens, before they turn to a gang or before addiction takes hold, before they're kicked out of an apartment. And that model, according to the mayor, Colleen Smook, has been working fairly well. They did a pilot project for 2 years, and this is the first year that they've been full-on officially working with the hub model. But everyone I spoke to said that it's working well. That doesn't mean there's no detractors. There are concerns about privacy with this model because a lot of information is shared with police behind the scenes for non-criminal issues. And the other concern is that, can this model keep up with the influx of people? Yes, the model is designed for a city of, you know, maybe 14,000, but again, it's 55,000 people that they're servicing. So maybe you help three youth one day and then, you know, five more youth come into the community with the same issues. So the mayor said the system is working, and everyone I spoke to, the RCMP seemed positive about it. Social workers seemed positive about it. But at the same time, it's a numbers game. There are so many people who come into the community that's a challenge for programs like Hub to keep up with it. Now, in good news, yesterday, the provincial government made an announcement about one of the programs that the mayor, Colleen Smook, referenced, and that is Street Reach. Now, Street Reach is aimed at protecting vulnerable youth, particularly preventing them from being exploited. But the spin-off effect is that it also sees a significant drop-off in youth crime when Street Reach is in effect. And how it works is people go out in the community at night, they make contact with kids, they follow up on tips, they become really ingrained into that youth community so that they can identify problems, help people, and also make sure that, you know, if people are on probation, that curfews are enforced and all of those things. So right after this story was published, actually, the provincial government announced $2.1 million in funding for that program to permanently establish it in Thompson. So I think people there, I'm going to go on a limb and say they're going to be pretty happy with that, because it did seem like one of the programs they had tried over the years and lost funding for previously that did have an impact. I spoke with Grand Chief Garrison City of MKO as well, and that's short for Manitoba, Kuwait, Maui, Omakanak, Inc. It's a political advocacy group representing First Nations signatories to treaties 4, 5, 6, and 10. Now, Grand Chief Steady said that he would like to see more cultural programming for Indigenous youth, and that's something that hasn't really come to fruition yet. So I think people there will be watching. And the other programming that people would like to see and they point to as a solution is, of course, First Nations themselves need more resources for housing, for addictions, for mental health, infrastructure, clean water. And Chief Seti definitely said that would help lessen the burden on Thompson by allowing people to stay in their home communities, where frankly, most of them want to be able to continue to live and often can't for one reason or another.
You mentioned the legacy of colonialism, and I wonder how much the civic officials are willing to grapple with that as a problem. You talked about some of the things that, the First Nation people say they could use. Is that acknowledgement there from the people running the city, and what's that relationship like?
Everyone I spoke to said the relationship between MKO and city officials was very, very good, and that seemed to play out. The RCMP also seemed to have a very good relationship with MKO, and that was in some ways surprising. I mean, I think when we talk about colonialism, we often talk about it as a historic issue. In reality, it's a present day issue. And I don't want to gloss over, you know, the fact that racism still exists in Thompson. And I definitely heard people in the community make extremely racist comments targeting Indigenous people while I was there. However, on the civic level, particularly with the city councillors I spoke to and the mayor, there was a really solid understanding and acknowledgement that reconciliation had to be part of how Thompson moved forward. And the best example of that, and this is something that didn't make it into the story, but I think is worth sharing, is a red bush plane that's on the outskirts of town. And I noticed this driving around. It's in Lyons Park. It's a static display of a bush plane. And it didn't really strike me as anything special at first. And when I spoke to the mayor, Colleen Snook, she talked about the controversy this plane created, and it was envisioned as a monument to aviation. I mean, in northern Canada, northern Manitoba, aviation is so important to getting to remote communities, to mining, to prospecting, to the economy. So a restored bush plane was put up as a monument to aviation. And the people who put it up weren't Indigenous, and their intentions were to honor one thing. But what was missed was that this was the same bush plane, the same make, the same model that came to take Indigenous kids away from their families and put them in residential school. So for survivors of residential school, this bush plane monument was really, you know, a very traumatic thing to see when they're driving in and out of the community. And it was a great example of how some things weren't considered, but how the city was willing to move forward. So what happened in the end, and not everyone in the town was on board with it, but the mayor was very strong and council was very strong, that they needed to amend the monument to include this history. So a garden of contemplation was added and a stone monument was added to the display explaining, you know, how this plane was used during the 60s scoop and during the time of residential schools. And that, you know, was a real act of tangible reconciliation that people seemed to feel was a good step forward. And I thought it really, you know, it told both sides of the story. Yes, there are times when people don't really understand the issue, but there was a willingness to find a way to be genuine and to bridge that gap. So it's complicated, but I do think civic officials in Thompson have a strong understanding of this. Now, that doesn't mean the solutions are easy, but it does mean that there's some common ground that I think they're moving forward from.
Lastly, I just wanted to ask you about your experience with just the ordinary citizens of the town, because I'm always curious about how conversations go when you kind of introduce yourself as a journalist who's there because your community leads the list for violent crimes. And what do you have to say about that? You know, how do they grapple with the state of their city? And what did they say to you about it?
Well, every time I asked someone about it, I got like, mostly eye rolls, and of course, this isn't a surprise to us.
Right.
No one was shocked with it. And, you know, the interesting thing was a lot of times as a reporter, you do have to go and you have to go up with your notebook and say, you know, sorry to bother you, I'm so-and-so from such-and-such. But in Thompson, as soon as I stepped out and I look lost or was standing there, people approached me. So there was a real friendliness. And I mean, I can't understate that enough. Like there is, you know, the license plates in Manitoba say friendly Manitoba. And it is true. People are really outgoing and curious. So anytime I was on the street in Thompson, people came up to ask me what I was doing. And the conversation came really, really naturally. Now, as to what people in Thompson thought about the violent crime, there was a lot of emphasis on what was visible, and that was, of course, homelessness and addiction. And I think it can't be stressed enough, and this is something the article really gets to the heart of, I feel, that the homeless population in Thompson is often the victims of these violent crimes. So they're not the perpetrators. Yes, there's problems with public intoxication and mischief, but they really are, generally speaking, on the receiving end of this violence. So I don't know if everyone I spoke to was really aware of where the violence was coming from in that terms, where those crime numbers were. But people are definitely open to speaking about it on the street. And they were hopeful that more attention being drawn to it, you know, it wasn't the best thing that they were there, but if more attention was drawn to it, maybe it would draw more resources and more attention and more discussion. And no one seemed to think that was a bad thing. And that was really refreshing. I do want to add too, I mean, the homeless population and transient population were extremely outgoing when I spoke to them. I mean, standing with a notebook, immediately I got questions from people, and they were really forthcoming and genuine. And it's difficult when people open up to you and you spend, in some cases, you know, an hour or more talking to them, and you know you have to distill their really intense and nuanced, you know, thoughts on their home city into a sentence or two. It can be daunting, but I feel like the people I spoke to in Thompson were really receptive and very insightful. So it was a very interesting experience, a challenging experience, but one that I think was rewarding. And I hope the story reflects some of the depth. I mean, I don't know if most Canadians will get the opportunity to ever visit Thompson, but it's an interesting place, and it definitely has a very rich story, even if it's not always a positive one.
Well, thanks for taking us there a little bit, Shannon.
Thanks for your interest.
Shannon Van Rays visited Thompson, Manitoba for Maclean's. That was the big story. If you'd like more, including the story we did about another community like this last year, you can head to thebigstorypodcast.ca. You can also find us on Twitter at thebigstoryfpn. You can find us in all of your podcast applications. Pick your favorite, head in there. Find us on Apple, Google, Stitcher, Spotify, any of them. You can also find all of our podcasts on the Frequency Network at frequencypodcastnetwork.com. Thanks for listening. I'm Jordan Heath-Rawlings. We'll talk tomorrow.